coming this March exclusively to my Patreon is my first written illustrated graphic novel by yours truly. It is a homage to Fahrenheit 451, as Guy Montag now has to serve out 30 days without technology, with the lights out. And in that process, he discovers a talent he never had, drawing life into the world. Now, as his sentence dwindles down and he's ready to return to society, maybe, just maybe, he has found something more to go for. Exclusively on Patreon starting this March. Check it out now in the episode description below. Once I get started here, Zoom and Twitch have a love-hate relationship. They love to hate each other.
Yeah, for sure. I've never done these on Zoom. I've always done like StreamYard and all those other ones.
Yep. There we go. Done. We are officially on this on there. I've hit the mute button on. Yeah, no, I StreamYard where I'm at, just for whatever reason, it tends to conk out, and then suddenly my sound just disappears. So I've been using, so I've just been using like Zoom for it, and Zoom works a lot better than it used to. It used to be a real pain in the ass to use Zoom. So now it's just like, you know, it's almost good, almost good. Now they have a big brother, little brother relationship. One wants to take the other's lunch money, but I'm not sure who actually wins on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, all I know is I spend way too many hours of my life on Zoom at work every day. So it's a good product that makes a lot of money for some people.
Oh, I do it too. Like I usually use it like when I'm not doing the podcast. What I tend to do is I'll build interview packages and video packages for people with Zoom. Because honestly, people don't interview well, and that's weird to me. So,
yeah, it's definitely a learned skill.
Yes,
public speaking, as public as this can be.
Yeah, well, you know, I fortunately have no problems making a complete ass of myself on the air. So this is we'll have a good time. We are live, ladies and gentlemen. This is Evan Carruthers. He is a comic book creator. A gamer, from what it looks like on your profile at the very least. So I'm sure we got stuff we can talk about. So you want to say hi to the audience? Because we actually have an audience here. So,
yo. Yeah, you're right. I'm a comic book creator, tabletop gamer, general all-around nerd.
Nice. So what's your tabletop game of choice?
These days it's primarily D&D, but I got started in kind of the whole content creation side of things with my side business called EC3D, which is tabletop gaming company. So I make 3D printed miniature designs, scenery, tabletop supplements, gaming mats, all kinds of stuff for tabletop gaming, like Starfinder, D&D, Pathfinder, all that stuff. So kind of a logical transition over to comics too, but I play all kinds of games.
That's cool. I'm a magic guy. I play Magic the Gathering. That's usually, I'm a commander. Yeah. I play commander at this point in my life because that's the cheaper way to play Magic. And I say that with a little bit of a twitch on my.
Yeah. I haven't played Magic for a long, long time, but I had a lot of fun nights when I was younger in college and stuff, doing drafts and having a lot of fun.
I still love a good draft. Like I honestly, like drafting is probably my favorite. Limited is probably my favorite way to play it, but draft is still super fun. It's just hard to find like people that regularly play draft anymore. Like I said, at this point in time, Commander's kind of taken over, which I'm always a little surprised, but I'm also not completely surprised. It's kind of the direction the game has gone. So,
yeah.
Yeah. So are you a DM or do you actually just enjoy playing in the campaigns when you play?
I have DM'd in the past, but I honestly, I'm a full-time software engineer, between creating comics and a side business and being a dad and everything, I don't have time to DM these days. I'd love to get back into it again because I enjoyed it. It's got a lot of crossover and a lot of similarities to writing a comic and creating a good world, ironically, but I'm mostly just a happy show up after work and play and turn my brain off for a while kind of guy.
Yeah, it's the thing. You get to turn off your brain, get to be someone else for a little bit and try not to die to a level one elf.
Yeah, right. Course.
Exactly, or something like that anyway, right? So that's cool. My RPG of choice was Shadowrun. I liked everything about it, but the Matrix is kind of weird. But besides that, it's a very fun game and pretty easy to pick up for everybody that wants to play it.
For sure.
So, yeah. So those were my things. How about board games? No? Yay?
Some. I got into them a little bit more early on when I was doing a lot of mini painting and stuff. I played like Blood Rage and some of the stuff like that that were really mini focused ones, but only so many hours in the day, unfortunately, not enough. I mean, some Hero Quest and stuff back in the day too, but not a lot of board games lately.
No, I got you. It sounds like you're pretty. What kind of software you do when you're in your day job?
Yeah, so currently I work for Indeed. I had a HR tech company that sold to them a number of years ago. So I write for their enterprise product over there and building some of my own stuff on the side now, looking to get back into that again. So I'm wear a lot of hats.
Ah, so. Are you at that point where you want to turn to your, you want to, are you happy with the, I don't want to like knock your company. That's not what I'm doing. Just like for your own personal goals, more your own creations you want to do as more and more as now you get older slash wiser, or are you content with your day job?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I'm not sure how much you follow the current state of the market, but the tech world is taking a beating right now in terms of layoffs and job availability and stuff. So pretty happy to have a job at the moment, but I'm the kind of person where I enjoy working for myself and having creative freedom. And my side business has given me a lot of that happiness with comics and the gaming and everything, but I'd like to get back into it. The only downside is that in the last couple of years since COVID really hit, I guess the tail end of it, anything that involves discretionary income, toys, collectibles, gaming, has taken a pretty big hit across the whole market. I mean, I'm sure you saw like Hasbro recently laid off a bunch of people and is cutting a bunch of stuff because they've been hardly selling any toys and gaming stuff this year. And it's just not quite as lucrative as it was a few years ago when, especially during the beginning of COVID.
Well, Hasbro's a weird one. Like, I follow them because of the fact that Magic, they own Magic the Gathering too. I'm not gonna say, you're not completely wrong, but I tend to find when I look at a company like Hasbro, I'm not entirely sure that they actually, based on some of the decisions they've made in the last few years, I'm not entirely sure they know what they're doing at this particular point, in the ball game. Right. I think this is kind of where we're at right now as far as the tech market is going, like from what I've seen. There was a lot of high demand for tech when the pandemic hit because that there was a big increase in that because everybody was staying at home. And I think what's happened now is as more and more time has gone on, some of those projects have finished because there isn't as much demand for the tech world at this point. And so there has been a there's been kind of like a tug of war about, okay, working remotely sounds like a great theory, and a lot of people prefer that. But there's also that I want to be involved in the real world in somehow, some way. And I feel like there's been a tug of war with that for the last couple of years. And I kind of feel like the tech has taken a back seat in the last little bit. Now, maybe I'm on something instead of being onto something when I say that, but. Because I obviously there's still lots of things going on with technology, but the
Right.
demand, the initial demand or the spike of demand dropped significantly in the last couple of years. And I think that's what's happening is everything's catching up with that.
Yeah, I mean, not to get too crazy into economics, but when money was cheap and interest rates were low and there was lots of venture capital, so many of these big companies hired and outgrew the actual headcount that was really useful for what they were trying to accomplish. So a lot of what they're claiming now is right sizing, right? Like they're cutting down to where they should have been when before they spent all that excess money they had for no reason just to grow unnecessarily and try to maintain some actual good profit margins now and get to, break even. But who knows? Every year or two they have a different story on why something's happening. So
Oh, sure. No, absolutely. Right now, like it's gone a downward swing. Next year, someone will come up with something brand new, right? And you'll be like, oh, so we're back up. And then the next year, and we're back down. And it's like, huh. It's like, and I don't know. Like I said, sometimes I wonder if anyone really knows what we're doing at this point in time. But then again, I'm not really in the tech world too much. I play with it a little bit with what I do, but not obviously what you're doing with software and stuff like that.
I mean, it's the macroeconomic spending trends are really interesting because, like I said before, they do influence things like comic spending, tabletop gaming. And then you hear that and you think those are the trends that are happening. But then you see things like I saw the other day, IDW posted record profits for the previous quarter from comic sales, too. So you can never quite tell what's going on. People, the ebb and flow of how media gets consumed is strange.
Well, like I said, it's interesting because I think we've been in a downtime for like in terms of the economy, we've been in a downtime pretty much since the pandemic. We haven't really had a quote unquote what I would call a good year because we've been dealing not just with the pandemic and everything getting slowed there. We've dealt with inflation, In Canada, where I'm at, we still are dealing with inflation. You, from what I can tell in the States, it's there's a bit of a deflation going on right now as interest rates keep going up, which is painful in and of itself, right? We're probably going to get there, I would like to say, in 6 months. but it's hard to say, right? So when you're watching what's going on it, which what's going on in the world, it's like everybody's kind of at this. I kind of feel we're in a weird spot. I think we're probably about a year or two away from having a really good year again. That's just maybe me being an eternal optimist, but I'm also just looking at just the way the trends are going. We're coming out of a lot of the messes, and now we're just like, it's about the cleanup process. I could be an optimist because Lord only knows what could happen in the year. But
all right.
But I kind of feel like we're probably about a year or two away from a really good year. And maybe the second half of the 20s will actually be a lot of fun. Fingers crossed on that
one. Yeah, but, right. There's no worldwide conditions that could cause anything bad to happen. Or hey, as long as we're still reading comic books and having fun and consuming all our nerdy media, I'm going to be happy.
Well, that's the other thing too. Like during like it's weird because people, even in bad economies, right? People have a tendency to try to escape more into worlds. And like when we talk about gaming, for example, that's why games are so popular, because what happens with games is, right, you get way more investment with your time with a game than you do with just about any other form of medium, whether it's a video game, a tabletop game, right? There's always a demand for that community involvement and interacting with people, but also just having a good time and making the most of what you have or don't have. And I kind of feel like that it's weird because you're right, there's less money, but when people do have it, they escape more. It's a weird psychology.
Right. Yeah. And then you have the dynamics, like you said, of like tabletop gaming requires other people, right? But comic books or video games are about you're by yourself, right? And some cases, not all video games, but yeah. And then it's very interesting. I saw some article the other day that correlated when, at least in the US, when the student loan repayment started again, there was just a drastic fall off in spend on video games and tabletop games and comic books and all that stuff as well, which makes sense.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. Like there's impacts. Like, hey, you don't have to pay your stuff because we're in the middle of a crisis. Yeah, it's true. But eventually you're going to have to pay because that's just how the world seems to want to work and with it, right?
So, people apparently want their money, apparently.
Yeah, apparently, right? So we have the pandemic was a weird time, and I do feel like a learning experience for a lot of us, and if there is a next time, it'll be very interesting to see what happens, good, bad, and indifferent. I could see a lot of interesting ways that could go, but I do know that anyway it goes, no matter what, people are always going to look for worlds and stories to escape into, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, on the flip side, if you are a creative, you do have, and everybody hates that term these days, but a lot of us are just dabbling in too much shit. So whatever your creations are, there is always a chance to find a home somewhere. It's just putting the work time and work out there.
Amen.
So, like I said, you told me off the air was a little bit what you have to recently, but you still a big comic reader?
Yeah, I haven't had as much time to read as I'd like. I have a pretty big backlog of stuff that I'm looking forward to. I'm some people are good at this, and other people get upset about it, but I do not read any of the big two. I never have. I'm very That's much kind of indie only. Read a lot of Image books back in the day, but I like to read a lot of, I don't know, like interesting indie creative or creator owned type stories, but
not as much as
I'd like these days, unfortunately.
I'm a total comics whore. I read a little bit of everything, right?
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. So like I read from the big two. I'm a big Green Lantern guy. I've always been a big Green Lantern guy. And I always will be, even though at this point there's almost, I've been in the hobby for like 30 years. So there's not a Green Lantern story I haven't read. But it's a little bit of that child nostalgia. I really like this. Right.
Everyone that does read that kind of, at least one of the big two, you know, kind of properties always has a tie to their childhood, or like they read it early on and it stuck with them for some reason. And there's nothing wrong with that at all.
No, absolutely. No. So I enjoy that. For currently with Image and Boom and some of the others, like I'm a big Terry Moore guy. I don't know if you're, if you know, like I like his stuff. He's a really, really good creative. He does a lot of cool things. I love his books. I think they're funny. They're engaging. I'm a big fan. I like the Kickstarter era of comics is such a fascinating place because there's a lot of good books out there. There really, really is.
There's a lot of great stuff and there's a lot of not great stuff.
Yes. And sometimes it's like a draw, like a lucky draw, right? So right. I'll sometimes look at something like when I read something, sometimes I'll think of, I remember reading something like this when I was a kid. Like when I read like someone like Rob Mottori, for example, I'm like, okay, I remember reading something like this. He reminds me of like the old school continuity comics, all like not because they were never on time, but more just because they had good, like Neil Adams had a really cool universe. Just
right, his books came out,
right? And same with like the old Malibu line and some of the older, like some of the old comics lines from back in the day that were different. That's what when I read his stuff, it reminds me of. And there's guys like him. There's people like, you know, I just had Steph Cannon and Matt Knowles on the show. They do really fun stuff too, right? And again, everybody has their own taste, but it's like you see the most chances, I think, right now in the Kickstarter realm, good and bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's Kickstarter is a very strange mistress. I feel like you're very much at the whim of trendy genres and things at the time too. Like I've had some Kickstarters where I felt like it wasn't my strongest work, and I had 200-300 backers, and then other ones where it's like currently my newest horror one as an example, I didn't do nearly enough of the marketing and promotion I was hoping due to a lot of factors, but it just does not seem to have the traction as other books for non always explainable reasons, which is interesting.
Well, I horror is an interesting one with comics because you almost would feel, because a lot of us old school guys above the old DC comics, like, hey man, that shit's cool and everybody likes that. But again, maybe it's the marketing. Maybe it's the right place, right time. You know, there's a lot of factors with that, and you kind of have to kind of make a decision of what, like, you have to make a decision of what you're going to go for. And the other thing too is also the competition. Kickstarter in the last few years, it's a cramped place, man. It's
The numbers are staggering. Yeah,
yeah. It's there's a lot of good books. You can only pick so many of them. It's like. Mm-hmm. I myself have like a little rule. I'm only allowed to go on like once a season on Kickstarter. I don't have privileges any other time, or my money would all be gone always.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a very strange place. I mean, I've backed books that had tens of thousands of backers that were crazy popular, and wasn't that terribly impressed with them. And then I backed books that had 50 backers and I was blown away with the quality and the story. And it's just very much a matter of exposure and you know, factors that seem to not always reconcile with how you would expect something to catch on.
Well, it's also like, I realize like what Kickstarter actually is, and it's not an indie market. It's not a traditional market. It's a collector's market. So one of the things that I look at when I look at it, like a Kickstarter book is, okay, what's the cool thing? Like what makes this one of a kind, unique?
Sure.
And again, that's harder to do today, like day than it was even a couple years ago. But finding those collectible gems is very much it's very much a thing, and I think sometimes it's just a matter of finding like what is that over the top thing that draws people in, and not every book has that. Some people do, like some people don't need it; they've been there so long. But sometimes you're just like, oh no, that actually makes sense. I can see why it just draws people in.
Yeah, I've seen some really weird stuff on there recently. The other day, or maybe a couple of weeks ago, I saw a book that had a marijuana scratch and sniff smell on it. I was like, this is an interesting new cover idea I have not seen.
Well, new slash old. It's like, hey, I've never seen this flavor before, but I remember the old
scratch and sniff. Oh, yeah, scratch and sniff. Yeah.
Right, that's what it is, right? It's a scratch and sniff idea I just kind of reimagined. I'm not saying that marijuana would be my first choice. But it'd be
each their own, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. To each their own. I'm not here to judge. It's just like, I'm not sure this is going to go after the audience you necessarily want. But then maybe
it is.
Or maybe it is, right? Or maybe it does, right? Right. Who can say, you know, it's who can say what again, good is always up for grabs, and for everybody, like whatever they're looking for, they can find it somewhere. It's just the question of, can you put the eyes on your work at the, I mean, timing is a part of it too. I think the last thing that needs
Oh,
to be
for sure.
mentioned, your timing of it. Your book might be like that book that you thought that was amazing that didn't do so well, right? Maybe, just maybe, if you had released it a year later or a year earlier, you had a bigger audience for it. It sometimes it's just timing.
Right. Yeah, it's really interesting, like how much of a full-time job it is to promote stuff and plan for things in a way that it never used to be in Kickstarter. Like I've done a lot of Kickstarters for tabletop gaming stuff before comics. And just kind of getting an understanding of how that market works and how you get visibility and like pre-launches and all that stuff is kind of its own science. And I feel like things used to very much be like, there was not as so much content on there where you would just get by virtue of being on there some free eyes from on things, but that's less of the case now because there's so much content on there and cutting through the noise is difficult. And if you're not pushing all the time, it's really hard to get people.
It's especially hard with games. Like games are all or nothing. Like they are generally all or nothing. I have seen, like I think the most extreme funding I've ever seen. Like one of my favorite games is Dice Throne. It does ridiculously well on Kickstarter,
Oh, for
right?
sure.
But for every Dice Throne, there's a game out there. It's like barely gets like $100. It is
Right.
so cutthroat. Like what you're gonna get, what you're looking for with a game is just like, if I'm gonna do a game on here, it better have something really fucking cool to it, because
Yeah.
otherwise, it's just that might even be a more competitive space than comics.
It's interesting. I've made this analogy before about this market too, but tabletop gaming is about 2 or 3 years ahead of comics in terms of the crowdfunding world, right? Because like, I mean, if you look at Kickstarter, let's say 6, 7 years ago, there was hardly a single, I mean, maybe there was 20 comics on there at a time, 20, 30 comics, but there was tons of board games and that was kind of the main go-to-market for a lot of indie game developers at the time. And then a lot of things like OnlyGames and all these other larger crowdfundings that spun out. And that's all happening exactly the same in comics. Now you have, the Zoops and all the other people that are kind of trying to replicate Kickstarter success in more niche focused sites. And then, the barrier to entry is really easy for people to write a comic. So you have a lot of people getting into it with their first or second comic. And a lot of these folks will probably not stick with it, and maybe it'll cool down eventually, but it's just interesting to see the parallels with what I've seen in both like card decks or tabletop games or board games, a couple of years ago.
Yeah, no, I kind of think like for me, like I think there's going to be a cool down period. There's going to be just by diminishing returns. I
Right.
also don't think that like I also there's going to be a retooling, because that's what's happened with games as well. Like there was a retooling with it. So it certain parts of the market just are set in stone. I speak as an author, right? I do my own, like I write prose as well as like comics. Right now, like if you're an author, Kickstarter's super appealing because it hasn't gone through the same ring
Sure.
as it has in comics and games. But with comics and games and other things, you can kind of see where it's going to go. So you gotta kind of, you have to, heck, I mean, you almost have this ability if you really want to. You can actually look, you can use games if you're a comic book person to model what your campaign should be. Because now you're like, okay, what is working here? How can I put that in here now? So
Right.
I'm not bulletproof exactly, but you know what I mean? Like I'm prepared for the inevitable.
Yeah, I thought that it would be really similar to the gaming crowd because I've done something like 35 crowdfunding campaigns so far and for gaming stuff. And I thought it was like, oh yeah, I'll just replicate this for comics. And it's quite a bit different. Like learning the intricacies of what the collector market expects, like you mentioned, and the price points and the buyer expectation is very different than what I assumed would be really easy to pick up. So obviously some of that experience did translate, but not one to one.
No. I because again, games require in some ways more investment, some
Yeah.
ways less, right? But
Right.
it's understanding, like games require interaction and world building, right? Which a lot more than I think a comic does. Because a comic's world building is the story itself. Less interaction, but what what makes it so shiny on Kickstarter? I think that's the big difference. Am I on something or onto something there?
No, I think you're right. And then polish is a huge part of it too. I mean, I'm sure you've seen this in any genre on Kickstarter, right? But the varying degrees of polish for a campaign for somebody who, you know, you can tell spent like hired a marketing team to do stuff versus like just kind of did it themselves, you know, with stock images and stuff. It's like, it's night and day. And I think in the consuming audience sees through a lot of that lately, because especially in indie comics, like there's really good stuff. And then there's really, like I said, really bad stuff too. And I think you can kind of often glean really quickly, like if a book is going to have great art and it's going to have great design and layout and all the things you want out of a medium that is graphical, that usually is translated pretty well into the Kickstarter campaign page as well.
Yeah, no, I think the big thing I'm noticing too is and this is going to be technical in the weeds, even the video quality for your intro and outro, right? I think one of the things that I do think longer content is going to become a little bit more popular again towards the latter half of the year, but TikTok has really influenced like digital content big time.
TikTok, yeah.
Yeah.
The old curmudgeons like me that are just finally starting to halfway figure out social media as Twitter is dying. Like, we got to go figure out how to do video now.
Well, it's too weird because I'm in a weird spot with social media. I don't know if Twitter's dying. I think Twitter is it's becoming more niche focused. Right.
Yeah, and not as useful for drumming up actual audience building from whatever.
No, because it's not like what Twitter, like each social media platform, the one I hate the most, honestly, is Facebook. Because I don't know what Facebook actually does well, other than everybody's on it, right?
Connects you with the people you do in high school, I guess.
Yeah. But I mean, that's the thing. Like, if I'm looking at, okay, so Instagram is graphics. Like, you can see graphics, art, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I can see the benefit. Twitter, if you're a journalist, you're on Twitter. Because Twitter, like, there's a lot of stuff going on, right, with Twitter that journalism in particular benefits from. Mm-hmm. If you're looking for businesses, you're going on LinkedIn. If you want quick content to entertain people, you go to TikTok. Facebook, the only thing Facebook has going for it right now is that everybody's still there, right? That's the only thing. I say that because it doesn't do anything well. It just doesn't.
I think the only thing, I have a lot of success on Facebook still in tabletop gaming, mm-hmm. and 3D printing, because I think the audience tends to skew a little bit more my age. And they still have some of the best tools for content specific groups. So like, you know, a group about 3D printing for tabletop gaming, right? Like a kind of a very niche thing. You can find that kind of stuff other places, but no other social media network has really done that well yet for really good like media sharing and conversations very much around a topic of moderation too. So I find that still very much ends up happening on Facebook.
That's fair. No, that's fair. It's just like, I tried to think about what they all do well, right? And I'm just like,
right. Yeah.
And I think what's happening is, I think social media has kind of gone to the point where it's like, okay, I can't be on all of them. I'm not good enough. I don't have enough time. As you say, it's a full-time job. Right.
Oh, yeah.
To get, you'd have to hire somebody like me to do it, because it's something I do a little bit. And it's just like, okay, if I'm not going to hire somebody, what am I going to do? And what you're going to do is you're going to pick one or two you're going to really focus on, because that's where your audience is. Mm-hmm. And you're going to promote the heck out of them, because that's all you have time for.
Yeah. I mean, even with, I use like Buffer as an example of a tool that allows me to post across, you know, my Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at the same time for both of my businesses. And even with tools like that, it's still just a massive time sink. And I have the capability to do the graphic design and everything myself, and it's still a lot. So I think I'm looking forward to some of the prevalence of things like AI to help speed some of this to market, but it's going to make it a lot of it all sound very similar. And
that's the thing. Like, it's actually going to make, oddly enough, AI, I kind of look at it like it's a double-edged sword. I'm not talking about content creation. That's a very different, very, very nasty black hole of the topic. But in terms of use, like, I can use AI right now for search engine optimization. That's been around for years. Even before ChatGPT, that's what a lot of AI tools were being used for. It's useful that way. You can still do stuff that way. But what's going to happen is very quickly, if people jump onto the AI content train, everything's going to sound generic.
Like that's absolutely right.
It's
you're already probably seeing that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it was starting to, but like a lot of people don't realize it. Like, if your voice doesn't stand out, you're fucked. Like, you're legitimately fucked, because what's going to happen is, if you have nothing like, if everybody's alike, you're not going to stand out. And that's something that I think 10 years from now, AI might be able to change that. I don't know. We'll see how things
are. I think it's going to be a lot less than 10 years. I mean, in the inner software engineering circles and some of the stuff that people are talking about, how AI is going to function and the way they're training the language models, there's companies intentionally focusing on doing exactly what we're talking about, where they're trying to give variety to voice and interesting tonality based on like settings you can do to try to really make it seem like, and even going so far as to like introduce errors in a way that makes it seem natural, like the way you're speaking or like the slight misspellings. Yep. That it's insane, like what they're trying to do to make AI not seem like AI.
You know, I'm aware of some of what they're doing and developing. I actually got approached by an AI company in terms of the podcast, believe it or not, just about some of those reasons you're talking about. And it's one of those situations where they're trying to, because they recognize the problem, which is like, you want something to sound human, right? And because people respond to human beings, and you can make an AI sound like a machine. Now, it still sounds like a machine. It still doesn't do certain things really well creatively. Those barriers will eventually be overcome. And some of them might have already, I mean, as we're talking, might already being overcome, but you still got to bring it to market. You still got to deal with the legalities and the problems AI creates too. Right. And that's going to be the next five years.
Yeah. Right. Very much so.
Yeah. That's the next 5 years. I think after that, we'll see. I mean, AI is here to stay. The genie's out of the bottle. I'm not having the, I'm not gonna say temper tantrums, because I understand it too, because there's a lot of what AI is using right now that's other people's, and people should be paid for it, absolutely. And I think that inevitably is going to come around the ballpark at some point. Mm-hmm. But even so, I'm not looking at AI in the terms of how terrible it is. I'm actually looking at it like, okay, how can I use it? Like, how can this, because what a lot of people have to realize is AI is selling, the big selling point is speed and time. And that's what they're going to sell AI on, is it's going to save you time. It's going to save you speed. As the world gets more and more complex, you're going to need a machine or an intelligence to keep track of this stuff for you. Right. Which, because we have lives, we don't have the time to focus exclusively like an AI does. And that's how AI works. AI works on a principle of it has the time and the speed to learn a task faster than we do. That's its big advantage. And that's going to be the selling point with it in the next, like, again, it's being sold now. It's being quietly brought in because, again, there's a natural backlash to it. Right.
Oh, yeah. It's not even being sold. It's in 2 years, it's going to be in everything, whether you know it or not. I mean, it's
exactly,
it just is what it is at this point.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. No, it is. The only thing is there's going to be, and again, it's already kind of started. There's a legal battle right now. And depending on how that goes,
content creation stuff. Yeah.
Not just content creation. Just other things. Like how much, what I think is going to end up happening is there's going to be a minimum requirement for, because the way the AI is ruled right now is AI is public domain, right? If it's a completely AI work, it's public domain. So what they're going to figure out is they're going to come out, in my take is they're going to figure out what a percentage of any kind of content creation a company can use legally that's AI generated, right? And then it's going to get like the content, like the checking and the balancing. It's going to be interesting to watch AI watching other AI so they don't cheat. That's where we're going. That's the next, I think, 2-3 years. Right. And then after that, again, we'll see where it pivots to from there. right? It might just be, dude, I might just go grab a boat somewhere and just go fishing, because I might be like, I'm out.
I say that to my wife all the time. I'm like, let's sell everything and then just buy a little sheep farm in Ireland and go live off the grid with good satellite internet so we can still contact the outside world and just forget all this bullshit. But here we are still.
Well, it's interesting, like the concept of, it's becoming a much more appealing one to a lot of people, is the whole idea of decentralization, the idea of kind of going off in your own little community or grid somewhere, because you're looking at, like, let's be honest, we're looking at the grid as we're seeing it. It's like, it'd be fucked up. Like, that's just it. It's like, I don't want to live in this anymore. I'm not sure this is what I signed up for. And I kind of feel like that's where a lot of people are at right now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a whole lot of Western civilization fatigue, I think.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I it's interesting because the technology is how we can, it's how we could separate from it, but it's also Ali that's going to tie us all together too. It's a very interesting spider web.
Yep. We'll all just get assimilated by the assumedly sentient AI in a couple of years anyway. So.
Or something. It's like, you're going to welcome our AI overlords, I guess, willingly.
Yep. Okay. I'll just be a bio battery for their machines, whatever they need, you know?
Okay. So at least you just be on the grid, so sleeping and then dreaming a dream for them for money. And that's how they make their thing off you.
Time shall tell.
Time shall tell. Indeed. Indeed. But yeah, that's like I said, it's interesting to watch where it's going. Like I said, it's there. Genie's out of the bottle. It's like, you know, once Pandora's box is open, you can't close it again. So.
Right. I think that's the biggest thing, is you see so many people like pushing back against AI, like they want to stop it. And you have so many people that don't even understand, like, AI is such a broad term that applies to so many different types of technologies, many of which have been around for 50 years in some cases, maybe not quite 50, but I was writing AI models in college 25 years ago that are similar technologies to what, you know, is now substantially better at building the language models, but it's nothing new. It's just finally getting to that inflection point of where the technology's caught up to be so useful, and it's not going away. People can bash their head against the brick wall of trying to stop it all they want, but the answer is to figure out how to do it responsibly, ethically, and in a way that can serve all humanity at the same time.
Yeah, and the responsible and ethical thing is the big battle for the next, as I said, 5 years. That's
well, the great news is that the people that are waging this battle are the really wealthy ones that are building the technology, like the Facebooks and the Googles of the world, and they've never done anything bad for privacy or anything, you know.
Well, that's
shareholder interests at heart.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? Like people. I was really worried. Like, again, we're not gonna go deep into the pandemic stuff, but one of the things I was really worried about, in 2020, was when all the censorship stuff started, like on Facebook and a few other places, and people cheered. It was like, are you gonna be happy about it in a few years' time? Yeah. Right. Are you really gonna be that happy about it? Because I don't think you're gonna be. And I unfortunately was right, because it's like, nope, now. That's the thing, right? If you look at the landscape, the real big problem is, if we want ethical stuff, we're gonna have to go against these big giant corporations in some form or fashion at some point.
Yep, agreed.
Yeah, that's just the way it's gonna have to be, and can't be divided by a lot of this strangely weird things that people are divided by, whether it is politics or something else, because it's not going to do us any favors at this point.
Yep. All we can do is drink a whiskey and watch the world burn down around us.
Very Joker.
As that came out of my mouth, I'm like, this is a little dark. I don't know if that's quite where I'm leaning, but
it's just like listening to that. It's like, no, that's a bit dark. There's no denying that. I have a slightly different take. It's just like, I think, if you want to look at the optimistic point of view of the future, is there's always ways this technology is used that benefits us that we never realize in the process of it coming to be. And that's going to happen here too. Because it happens with everything. So it's going to be interesting to see, again, what the world's going to be like in just 10 years, 10 short years, right? Because
I think 3 years is going to be game-changingly different even.
Oh, no, absolutely. No, game-changingly different is going to be, that's every day. Like, If you look at it honestly from how technology and knowledge is doubling and tripling, it's no one can keep up with it anymore. Honestly, day in and day out, it's a different world and people just don't know it.
Right. Oh yeah, I have a 2-year-old son and I have no idea what the world is going to be like when he's old enough to be interacting with technology, you know, regularly and have all this stuff be a part of his life and what their situation, that generation's life is going to be like. It's going to be quite different.
Yep. The only thing, if I do have kids and I deal with it, it's just like, I got to teach my kids how to think for themselves. That's basically the big thing. I got to make sure that they're right. The only thing I look at when I look at something like ChatGPT, it's because I just see how people turn off their ability to think sometimes. It's like, yeah, I'm going to make sure that doesn't happen with my kid. But besides that, right. that's pretty much it. Like, my job is to make them able to solve their own problems going into the world. That's it.
Right.
And the rest of it is just like, I might know what's going on. ? I don't know about that entirely going on, but I can figure it out, and I'm going to teach them how to figure it out.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's all we can hope for as far as that go. And then not so much watch the world burn. It's like, hey, listen, do better than us because we were fuckers.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, that's the generational hope, right? That your kids just do better than you did.
Yeah, that's it. Like, please don't make my mistakes. I know you're going to make some of them, but don't make all of them.
Right.
Yeah. So that's just,
now I'm craving a whiskey. That wasn't even my intent, but
hey, you know, we went surprisingly down a deep well when we talked when we went into AI. So, you know, we almost should talk something light, like, I don't know, politics. No, I'm kidding. No,
yeah, you, right.
Jesus. You don't even go there.
I'm trying to keep myself as far away from politics as humanly possible these days.
Okay, so. This is the thing. It's what politics has degenerated into. It's not, I love talking about issues. Like, we just talked about one, believe it or not, AI is a genuinely issue going forward. I don't mind talking about issues. And I'm sure as a software engineer, you thought I was a little bit on drugs with some of the things I was saying, because you're like, I know better because I know what's going on. But at the same time, it's just like, we are all looking at this technology in our own way. And having these discussions is a good idea to understand where kind of everybody's coming from, what everybody wants. I love that shit. I don't care who your candidate is. But a lot of people have gotten into this kind of like idea that it's almost like high school. You like my guy, or if you don't, you're not part of the team. And it has gotten very weird that way.
Yep, it's a world divided these days. Let's just all come together and read comic books and enjoy each other's company.
That's right. We should read comic books, have ice cream, maybe drink some whiskey and with the ice cream. That sounds like a good plan, actually.
Yeah, that's a good combo.
Yeah, it's a very good combo. My personal favorite is Bailey's and ice cream. I find it's actually a really good combination. You take like mint ice cream and Bailey's. You put it together, and the world doesn't feel like such a bad place.
The Canuck and you will appreciate this, but my dad makes maple syrup, and warm maple syrup on vanilla ice cream is probably my favorite thing.
Oh, it's best. The cool thing about maple syrup, like, the warmer it gets, the more like purer it gets. Like, it actually gets
richer. Yeah.
So it's great stuff. Like, if I had my way in my coffee, it would be maple syrup all day long.
It's just candy.
Good. Yes, it is. It's just good shit. Honey is my second choice, but maple syrup, man, is definitely like number one on my list. It's just good
shit. Maple syrup's an amazing thing. I use it as a sweetener in cocktails. I use it on ice cream, baking. Like, it's so many great uses.
Yes. And honestly, maple syrup is gold. And if you don't like maple syrup, I worry about you as a person. That's absolutely true. I worry about you as a person. So, okay, let's go to something nice and light, because we kind of went down a thoughtful yet oddly dark, provocative rabbit hole. Let's go on the lighter one. How did you get into comics?
Yeah, we touched on this earlier. I mean, I did a lot of world building, quote unquote, by creating tabletop gaming and stuff over the years. And one of those worlds I created was a sci-fi world called the Ignis Quadrant, where I was creating a whole suite of characters, monsters, miniatures, vehicles, all kinds of stuff that was kind of game agnostic. to be 3D printed at home to use for like Starfinder, Five Parsecs from Home, like all these different sci-fi games that you play on the tabletop with miniatures. And as by virtue of just doing that, I was like, God, I'm really into this story. I'd love to develop it further. And I had a pretty good depth of experience working with artists for concept art and game design art and different things too. So I just kind of did a little more research, and I'd always loved reading comics. And I was like, man, I think I'm just going to make some comics. And I made my first one, which was the Ignis Quadrant, which was a 6-issue run for the first volume. Did all those on Kickstarter, and then I was just hooked. So now I have like 5 or 6 different series I'm working on right now. I have like 7 unreleased books and a couple of publishing deals coming up and some fun stuff I'm excited about.
Congrats, man. But honestly, with everything, it sounds like you've... How long have you been working at this?
I started making comics probably 3 years ago. Oh, wow. But it was a pretty easy transition for me, like I said. Like, very different than somebody just coming off the street and trying to do it. Because I have by virtue of all my business stuff, I have a graphic design background. So I letter my own comic books. I do the pre-press work because I have experience doing that. Writing, you know, all that stuff. So it wasn't like a cold start by any stretch of the imagination, but I've been making comics now for, I guess, 3 years.
No, that makes sense. No, I'm just saying it like that because it sounds to me like what happened with you was it's like it just was a natural progression for what you were already doing.
For sure. Yeah, I just find things that I enjoy doing and find a way to make money doing them, or at least not lose money doing them. That's the goal.
That's fair. Like, I mean, so I'm gonna go back full circle then. So then your dream world then is creating, actually, hard choice, games or comics? What do you prefer?
Couldn't make that choice. I would have to probably go games simply because of the financial viability is substantially different than comic books. And there's more of a depth of my skill sets I can leverage in games, whether that's, you know, there's technology components of some games like mobile apps that can go along with them, 3D design, writing, graphics, you know, whereas comics are a little bit more, they're very creatively fulfilling, but you don't get to run the full gamut of all the different types of things if you want to bring them in.
No, I look at it like this. Games are like another dimension. And I say this with respect to it. Like, I'm a prose writer first, then a comic book creator second, and then, but games have such an interactive aspect component to them. And it's something that no matter how good the book or comic is, it can't duplicate it. Like, they've tried.
Yeah. Oh man. One of the editors I work with a lot on that edits some of my comic stuff is a full-time video game content creator. And he just, the amount of sheer like brain power and foresight that goes into tying all these giant, you know, story webs together and pathways of games and how the content has to have like a through line that also resonates with the player that's doing it. It's like, it's a very interesting writing challenge. I don't think I'm up for, but I really respect those that can do it.
It's something I want to do. It's on my list, actually. Like, honestly, yeah. Movies don't excite me. I'm not saying I wouldn't say no to a pile of money coming my way for a movie deal.
Yeah. I
right.
Get you.
But I would prefer a video game. Because
it's more interesting.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's just because you can do more with it. Like, my favorite video game right now I'm playing is Personify the Royal. Right?
Heard of it. Not super familiar though.
It, from a story perspective, it's okay, so basically it, like, from a game mechanic standpoint, it's The Sims meets a JRPG, a traditional JRPG dungeon.
Sure. Yeah.
Right? But story-wise, It the social interactions in the game and the design of the game is at such a degree that it's like it hooks you, and no matter what path you go down, because you have a lot of options, right? The thorough lines in the game are very intriguing, very interesting, and it takes you down like some very unique paths, right? Which is something I cannot say. A lot of games can do well, right? But because it's a game, right? Because it's a game, I'm getting a double reward. I'm getting the emotional payoff of the story I'm watching unfold, but I'm also getting a say in how the story goes. And there's something that and as much, the closest a book can come to that is ironically a choose your own adventure book. Right, it's the closest, and it's still like the thoroughfares and the lines you're doing in comparison to a game doesn't even come close.
Yeah, I mean, just the sheer number of hours of writing that goes into that. I mean, it's like a 10 or 20x, if not more, which you might see for a book or, you know, something that would be a similar challenge.
Even if it's just looking at it from a dialogue, just strictly a dialogue point of view, okay? Like, look at a game like, this is an oldie. I don't know if you ever played it. Have you ever played Earthbound?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I got a smile on your face there.
It's Yeah. Earthbound, Chrono Trigger, like, that was my time period.
Chrono Trigger.
Secret
Chrono
of Mana.
So for me, Final Fantasy VI is my favorite from that era. Then it's Chrono Trigger, then Earthbound. It's the order I played them. Like, legitimately, it's the order I played them.
God. I recently replayed Chrono Trigger, like, maybe, like, only a year ago on emulator. But I've replayed that game probably 6 or 7 times since it started existing back in the day. Like, because I lost my SNES version of it, and I had to, when emulators came around, I was so happy.
Yeah, especially, like Earthbound, like, that's an expensive game to get originally now.
It is now, yeah.
It's ridiculous. I have an original copy of Final Fantasy VII. I still have an original copy of that. I still have a few original copies of some of those games from that era.
VII was PS1, right?
Yeah, that was PS1.
Because Fantasy III is probably my second favorite game to Chrono Trigger.
So three is actually Final Fantasy VI. Like, it's actually six. Like,
it was It was marketed as three on the SNES.
Yeah, three is my, like, six or three, depending on when you played it, is my favorite because the bad guy wins. That's what makes a game so good. Halfway through, you're like, well, I didn't expect that. I didn't expect him to win. Right? But he wins. And then the game gets really, really interesting. And even, like, if you look at those games, okay, they're, compared to today, simplistic. Compared to today, right? But they're still endearing.
But they get you in the emotions because it works.
Yeah, no, it's totally. No, they get you in the emotions. But they also, like, okay, so I think comparing 7 to 6, 7 plays better. Like, as a game, it just plays, it feels a lot better to play. But 6 is a better overall package, because I think the story is stronger in 6 than it is in 7.
The one advantage too that 6 has is that even though it's even worse graphically than 7, it's not dated because it's not 3D, right? So 7 feels extremely dated graphically at this point, but 6 is always going to hold up.
Yeah, no, that's part of, like, the sprite concept is part of the charm of the game. But I also, I just think too, it's just the story and the gameplay was much more, again, emotional, from the emotional investment. Mm-hmm. I think 7 is good. Ironically, after Aerith dies, and folks, yes, I'm spoiling it, but it's like it's been.
Yeah, forever. Spoiling a 30-year-old spoiler.
yeah. But the thing is, that's the emotional peak of the game, right? That's the emotional peak of the game. And then after that, I'm not saying the game is bad, but it's less interesting after that
different.
Moment, right? Whereas in 6, the world blows up. And
you know the other, yeah. Didn't mean to interrupt you, sir.
Yeah.
I'm just getting excited.
You know, this is our era of games, right? So I think Celis's emergence as the main character, like, I truly think she's the main character of the story. Even though she's not introduced right away, she's the true main character. If you fail to save Cid, that is literally one of the darkest things I've ever seen in a video game, ever. But it's so human because it feels real. What do you do in a world where all hope seems gone? Right?
Where every choice is a bad one, but you got to make a choice.
Yeah. And that's interesting. And that is such an interesting story, right? The story, I mean, the difference between the two games is the story in 7, the climax is Aerith's death. Everything that kind of happens afterwards is almost to a design. And I don't think it's a bad story, but I don't think it has the same oomph.
Right.
Whereas in 6, the world blows up, and now the story is almost really begins now.
The other thing those games just nailed for their time, which is insane because it was like 8 and 16 bits at the time. They're the first games where the soundtrack mattered that I remember, like the music and the audio and the sound and everything, making the game, elevating it in a way that I didn't even know was a thing.
Chrono Trigger, I thought, did that the best.
Yes.
I think
I mean, yes.
Chrono Trigger did that the best, because Chrono Trigger kind of like the game feels fun immediately, and it's completely the music, right? And I
Yeah, you're
realize,
right.
right, it feels fun immediately, but everywhere you go has its feeling, its personality. It's like no matter what part of the game you're in, there's that personality there, and it's just like
Yep. You can
that.
remember where you were in the game 20 years later by the music.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's a credit to, and Earthbound is just wild. Like it's like the last, that is probably, I realized, like, again, partly it was the Angry Video Game Nerds review of it, but also partly just I realized the very end you're fighting your own system. Like that's the last boss in Earthbound, and it's like what a creative idea this is,
Yep.
right? So
Ahead of its time.
very much so. And all three of those games, by the way, folks, on a personal note, if of the three we just listed, if any one of them is your number one, I'm not gonna argue with you.
Yeah, you can't. There's no winning that conversation one way or the other.
And almost everybody that is in that era will agree that those were like the three best games ever. Like it's really your order, and that's all there is to it. And it's like there's a reason they haven't been remade. That's just kind of my take on it. There's a reason. Because I don't think you could
Yep.
top the feeling that all those games created.
People have tried to replicate them very poorly. It's never they've never even been able to match their own success. I mean, I would argue like Final Fantasy never got to that level again of storytelling. They tried a lot, but they had to try to come up with creative ways to overdo their own storytelling, and I didn't think it worked all the time.
I think, okay, so this is my take. I think 7 and 8 are both fine games story-wise. 8 drives me nuts for some of the mechanics, but story-wise, I think they're fine. I don't think they hit quite the same notes, but I think to their credit, they didn't try to. Like I think they just realized, right?
Yeah.
I think both games kind of feel their own thing. There's a lot of people that think Seven's the best game of all time, and I can't argue with the success of it. If that makes sense, right? So,
Right.
right, I can't argue with the success of it. So it's one of those situations where I can look at the games honestly and go, okay, they're all good, but there is something very special about Six. There's something very special about Chrono Trigger. Like that was a very, like
Right.
a lot of RPGs today try to have the same gravity, and I don't, I there are exceptions, but by and large, I think it, again, this isn't just us, me talking through rose-colored stained glass windows. Like story-wise, it just, the beats are all there.
This is undisputable, time-honored evidence. Like, there's no arguing this. The dust
Dude,
has settled on this conversation a long time ago.
you're like, I will 100% agree with you. But like I said, I will respect
Yeah.
the games that have come after it too. There are good ones. It's just,
For sure.
yeah,
Yeah.
that it's the emotional stuff. You don't do it. But like I said, that's what games can do. Like that's what makes games really, 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 really interesting, is you can have a great story and you can feel like you're a part of it in a way you can't do with a book, which is why, like, I would be more excited about a video game deal than I would a movie deal. That's saying that I wouldn't like say no to a movie deal, but you know what I mean?
Right? No, I understand exactly what you're saying.
Yeah. So I mean, so when your books become when one of your books becomes the next Final Fantasy VI, you know you've made it.
Great.
Right? That's the thing. So, Mr. Evan,
Yeah.
I'm sad this is coming to an end.
Well, we'll just have to chat again sometime, I guess.
Yeah, it was nice to meet you. Like actually meet you. So, we should plug something. Like, well, I mean, I realize this has been like very, very much. So
That's all right.
we went from the darkness of AI to the joys of Chrono Trigger. I think that's a really good
Yeah.
arc of a conversation. So, you probably so what do you want to talk about? Your most recent book, a book coming up. What do you
Yeah.
want to do?
I got a Kickstarter live right now for a book called Mixology Noirs. I'm behind in promotion, but it's still coming along. It's a double feature horror book. So it's got two standalone 32-page stories.
Do
Yep,
you have
I'll
a
drop the
link?
link in here. Yep.
Yeah, give me a
It's
link.
mixologynoir.com, but I'll paste it in Zoom here too.
Yeah, because folks, I'm a trained professional or something like that, or something.
This is the second volume in this series. It's got different artists for each of the stories. great reviews for the first volume. Like all my back catalog is also available for my completely wrapped up first volume of Tox, which was just published on the direct market as well. My past sci-fi series, there's a lot of great stuff in here, especially if you're into horror.
Okay, I'll ask this question. I know we don't have time for a big in-depth discussion. Favorite horror, yeah. Favorite horror of all time.
Of all time?
Yeah, we're good. This is, it's a good way to wrap this up for now, because that gives us a place to talk about next time.
I don't even know if I can answer that question. I like very specific types of horror. I don't like being scared. I don't really like deep thriller type of stuff. I don't even know if I can answer that question. I'll say one thing. The most recent horror that I read that really stuck with me, and it's not even recent, but I'm excited, is Witches from Scott Snyder, which is coming to Netflix. I'm very excited for that. That series scared the shit out of me.
I like his American Vampire.
I'm a big That's fan also of that. Good. That's that, less I'm horror-y than Witches, but it's still in the horror genre.
That's the thing. It feels like it's dirtier. That's how I actually feel. It's a dirtier horror, and I kind of dig that. So, but to each
everybody loves a dirty horror.
That's right, and that's right. And take that as you take it, ladies and gentlemen. Well, folks, we got to wrap this up. Check a look at the link in the description below. I have the Kickstarter looked up there. You can go check it out. You can do that right now. It's going on. It will be going on for another like 3 weeks. So definitely check this out. And Evan, you got to come back again, man. We got to bullshit about more video games sometime.
Well, the coffers run deep.
Yes. On that note, ladies and gentlemen, I will say thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. However you did this, support the Kickstarter. I offer, like I said, a Kickstarter service. It's all in the episode descriptions below. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. Stay inspired. Keep shining in the dark. And I'll see you guys next time.
Looking for a better way to connect to your Kickstarter audience? Looking for videos to reach out and inform your followers what exactly is going on, fulfilling campaigns, or, you know, just creating content to interact with audience? I'm your guy. If you're an author looking to make something, a dynamic video, to reach out and actually reach your Kickstarter followers, whether it's offering a cool reward, whether it's answering mail, whether it's whatever you can imagine, I can be there to help you. Check out my Kickstarter services in the description below.
Josh.